Now on Sports Talk, it's SC Wild with Major Billy Downer of the Department of Natural Resources. Major Downer is here to take your questions about the great outdoors in South Carolina. Give him a call at 888-898-2525. It's SC Wild from DNR on the Sports Talk Radio Network.
All right, time for another edition of SC Wild here on Sports Talk, starring Major Billy Downer from the Department of Natural Resources. Good to have you with us. Hope you had a great holiday weekend. How are you, sir?
Always a pleasure to be with you, Phil, after 4th of July weekend. And as we look to the next week or two of activity for us, sure.
Absolutely. Before we talk about things currently in our minds tonight, how about the holiday weekend, the 4th of July weekend around the state, on the lakes and the rivers and the ocean, boating-wise, were we relatively safe this time around?
We were relatively safe. Came out of the weekend as far as Saturday, Sunday, Monday, the holiday weekend itself without any accidents. So we're very happy about that. I think it was one end of the week last week, but that really wasn't on the 4th of July weekend. So we did have one fatality, though, last week, but none that I can report over 4th of July, which is great. That's always good. We have, get through a weekend like this with that many boaters and come out without any kind of major accidents. So, always a bump up here or there, but nothing major that I can report. So, folks, we saw crowds on Saturday. It's interesting. It's always fun to kind of compare to past years. And boating on Saturday was not the big day on Lake Merrin, at least. Sunday was the huge day. The 4th itself was a bigger day for people. And Monday, of course, is always the day when everybody leaves and goes home, so it's not as big a day there either. But Saturday was a slower day, and Sunday was a bigger day. So not sure how it was on all the lakes across the state, but this year on Lake Merrin, that's what we saw. Went to work with the guys there and into the evening, and a couple fireworks shows here and there. But again, relatively safe, most people. Officers did a good job across the state, just maintaining safety and watching out for the public.
What about, you mentioned fireworks, and that's always a concern. And, I heard some tragic stories, not necessarily in our backyard, but from other parts of the country. What about here in South Carolina? Did you hear many stories of issues related to fireworks?
No, not that I could report, because most of the fireworks that we're going to be concerned with are ones on the water shows, and I don't know of any accidents that happened there at all. The biggest thing, again, we see the congregation of boats over the 4th of July weekend for fireworks shows, boats gather together on the water, and a big concern there was making sure boats had proper lighting when it got dark, so that you could see the front bow light, red and green bow light, and then the all-around light, white light in the back. So that was our main concern. We didn't see a lot of issues there.
So now we have got a tropical storm by the time it gets to us coming into the state of South Carolina, maybe started early this afternoon, going to be moving in through the evening overnight. And, the weather people are saying you could get a pretty good dose of rain, little pop of wind, maybe a little more than natural. I mean, fortunately, this is not the full-blown hurricane coming in off of our coast. It's coming up through Florida, Georgia, and weakening, I guess, as it gets through here. But from a DNR standpoint, you can't take anything for granted. What kind of things are you guys doing tonight and maybe Thursday in preparation and also in the aftermath of what's going to be happening here?
Sure. Sure, absolutely. So, our folks at EMD, we've got a captain under me and a lieutenant that work directly under EMD as far as their priorities, and they've been following this and meeting and going to all the meetings. And as everything today, we are so much farther along with hurricane tracking, storm tracking, than we were 30 years ago. We got better prediction models. We're looking at things weeks out in advance. What if it does this? And, every day it was a different model. What's going to happen was tropical storm force winds went up to 30% for Buford and the coast, and now they're back down to the 15 to 9%, 10%. Or less on the coast and more inland. So the track appears to now be that the storm will most likely go more inland. Looking for a storm surge of 1 to 2 feet, which is, again, above your mean or your low tide or high tide, whatever it is, one or two feet above that normal level at the time it comes. That could cause some flooding, minor flooding on the coast. Probably not as bad. It's definitely not as bad as it could be. But, you know, a lot of rain in Charleston always floods the streets anyway. So if you get a lot of rain in Charleston, it's going to flood. So cities like Charleston that have low-lying areas and folks that live in low-lying areas that are prone to flooding, if you know you're going to get 2 to 4 inches, what they're predicting, potentially 6 inches in some areas, that's a lot of rain at one time, and that could cause some local flash flooding. So we want folks to pay attention to that if you live in low-lying areas, because our officers are always going to be on standby to respond to flooding. We don't expect major flooding out of the storm. Just don't. Anytime there's wind, there's always a chance of a tornado. Anytime there's wind, there's a chance that limbs are going to fall. So, you know, make sure you heed that in your yard. Folks that have big trees or trees that have dead limbs that you haven't gotten rid of, you haven't got out the tree, you know, when it gets windy like this, that's when dead limbs fall. Mm. That's when trees that have weak roots will fall. So if you already had a tree that's weak, you know, wind's going to make it fall, even in a bad rainstorm. So, and that's going to get blamed, of course, on the tropical storm, but it would happen in any windstorm. So just need to pay attention to that in your local area. You know, stay inside, stay safe. Again, you know, we all joke the water's gone, the milk's gone, the bread's gone from the stores, plywood. This is not expected to be that big of a storm. Could surprise us, but I doubt it. But people are taking necessary precautions, and our state agencies are taking necessary precautions to be prepared in case it is more than we might expect. But again, local flooding possible, 2 to 4 inches of rain with as much as 6 inches possible in isolated areas. So that's the warning right now. That's what they're saying.
All right. So, and this is SC Wild with Major Billy Downer from DNR. If you have a question or comment for him, we can take your calls directly to him, 888-898-2525. So whether it's an inch of rain, 2 inch, whatever, you're going to get some flooding in some areas. What is the advice? Let's say I'm driving down a back road and I come up on a flooded area and I'm thinking to myself, in my sedan, regular level off the ground, not something, you know, riding up 3 or 4 feet, I can drive through this, no problem. Yet I start riding through it and all of a sudden, you know, I feel my car starting to float, or I see water, you know, seeping in through the doors, that sort of thing. So what do you do? What do you say to somebody when they come up on a situation like that, crossing a highway or crossing a road where it looks like a little stream is going across there, or you're about to drive through a pond?
First of all, it's always the rule that, you know, the news agencies say, turn around, don't drown. Mm. Seriously, it's a quick little phrase, but you don't travel across flowing water on a road with a car, because as little as 6 inches could cause a car to lose ground, you know, could lose attachment to the ground and move the car. So, again, you don't go through flooded areas. Just stay away from those. If you see water crossing the road, it's a great question, Phil. It happens all the time. People need to stay away from it. Too many times people cross that, just like you said, and all of a sudden, what they don't know is it may be 6 inches where they are or 3 inches where they're looking at, but as they go a few feet further, the water's washed out the road. There's a pothole. Now it's 10 foot deep. Mm-hmm. You don't know that. Mm-hmm. And then your car sinks in there and you got a drowning situation, or you got water rushing and it's hard to open doors against water rushing or water flooding the car. All those, you know, bad thoughts come into play, and it could be avoided if you just don't try to cross flooded zones. So that's the biggest piece of advice, is don't cross areas where the water's across the road. It's just not smart to do so.
Good advice. Good advice.
You know, let's cover, we can go back to storms a little bit more, but I want to go over some of the legislative updates,
okay,
some of the law changes. Since it is now, you know, July the 8th now, isn't it?
Correct.
7th.
7th, yeah.
Tomorrow's the 8th. I'm one day ahead.
Incorrect. So it's the 7th. Tomorrow's the 8th, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So once we get to July 1st, a lot of our laws have come into play now, the new changes. So we want to go over a couple of those. We talked about flounder. The flounder limit is now gone from 10 to 5 per person and 10 per boat. Blue catfish changed. A lot of people don't know this. It's now unlawful to possess more than 2 blue catfish greater than 32 inches in any one day on any state water. It's also unlawful to take more than 25. So now there's a 25 bag limit, a catch limit basically on catfish. You can have a Kriegel limit. In other words, you can only have 25 blue cats caught in a day anywhere in the state, and you can, and only two of them can be greater than 32 inches in length. So that's a change on blue catfish. Then some concerns from Lake Marion, Lake Moultrie, the Sandy Cooper area, but that now takes effect all across the state. So that's new, took effect in the middle of last month. We talked about non-game fishing devices. There's some the use of set hooks is now allowed on certain portions of the Santee River. That's below Lake Marion, Lake Moultrie. It's on down toward to the freshwater saltwater dividing line. There's actually a very specific area. It's from the U.S. GS gauging station, about 2.4 miles below Santee Dam, downstream from the saltwater freshwater dividing line. That is the area on the north and south Santee rivers where you can now use set hooks. Not on the upper reach of the Santee River, not above Lake Marion, none of that. It's going to be far below the Santee Dam, about 2.4 miles below, down to the freshwater saltwater dividing line. So a small change there. There's a law that passed that prevents the live transport, and it talks about swine, but what it is really focusing on is the transportation of wild hogs. Make it illegal to transport wild hogs on a public road or waterway without an official form of identification approving by the state veterinarian that shows where those pigs came from. So that's a new law. A lot of details on that I won't get into. I'll show it to just get really deep. But there's a new law there to help prevent folks from moving wild hogs from one county to the next or within a county just because we've had such a problem with feral hogs in the state and don't want them to be able to continue to be transported to other places and create more problems. Bear hunting in Game Zone 4 is now going to be allowed to be the bears can be taken over bait. You know, in Game Zone 4, we have a very strict tagging requirement there for bear. People can put in for tags, and if you draw them for a tag, you'll now be able to use bait to hunt a bear. A lot of different opinions about that, but trying to control bear population. So now
is that because the bears the bears is it bear bears. Is right, plural, right? Bears have become, well, like deer and deer. Is it bear and bear? No, it's bear and bears. But I mean, they've become more numerous down in that part of the state, and you can do this?
They have. We've talked about the population there has always been, it's large. It's a lot of bear there. And the target number of bear that they want to take are not being taken. So it was brought up about unprocessed bait, which basically means any natural food. So what can be used for bait for bears? Is anything harvested from a plant crop that's not modified from its raw components, unmodified grains, fruits, nuts, and vegetables. You can't take a candy bar, you can't take a honey bun and bait for bear. You have to use natural food, unprocessed food, which means you could use corn, wheat, things like that, peanuts. You could use those to bait bears, and that does work pretty well. So we'll see over the next year or two what that will do for our bear population on the coast to kind of see what, you know, what effect that has. I'm sure the department will be looking at that pretty close. A lot of opinions on bait, just like where we're deer, but they're allowing bait for bear now in Game Zone 4 this coming season. Flounder, we talked about flounder. The minimum size used to be 15 inches. Now the minimum size is 16 inches. The bag limit went from 10 per person to 5 per person or 10 per boat. So a total of 10 fish can be taken in one boat. The fees for saltwater licenses, in addition to in this flounder bill, the fees for saltwater licenses have increased to help with some studies on flounder and to provide some money for a flounder release program where the department's been tasked with coming up with a method of raising flounder and releasing them much like we do the redfish or spot-tailed bass. So the resident saltwater license used to be $10, is now $15. And that took effect again July 1st, just a few days ago. So the new annual license for saltwater is $15. That extra $5 is going to go toward helping fund some of the studies for flounder. which is going to be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's some of the major changes in our in the law. You know, we talked about as far as things that are going on. One more on non-game fishing devices. In the past, folks who were fishing trot lines, set hooks, things like that, you could not have a game fishing device in your boat while you were doing that. That now part of the law has been rescinded. So now you can go check a trot line and have a rod and reel in the boat. You just may not have any game fish in the boat while you're checking trot lines, because then you wouldn't be able to prove you didn't get it off the trot line.
Mm-hmm.
Your trot lines and set hooks are only for non-game fish. So that did not change, but you can have game tackle in the boat. That did change. So those are the major changes right now. You stay up to date. We'll keep watching some of these things, particularly bear bait, just kind of see how that goes in the next year or so and what effect that may have on our bear population. So it'll be interesting to see that.
That is one thing I did not foresee coming over the years, a problem with the bear population in a section of our state. You know, I listen to a lot of New York City radio, a lot of news out of New York City, and they often talk about bear attacks up there and in Connecticut and even, I guess, in Jersey. But, I mean, have we had many cases of bear attacks in that neck of the woods in South Carolina you're talking about?
No, we haven't. You know, we've talked about our black bear population here is generally pretty, I'm not going to say docile, but they are not as aggressive. Certainly not as aggressive as, you know, grizzly bears and things like that, or even black bears in other parts of the country. Our black bear here act more like deer in that when they see you, they run off.
Mm-hmm.
They're startled. They may, you know, stand up, hold their ground a minute. The only time you're going to see black bears be any type of aggressive behavior, show or display aggressive behavior, is when a sow's got cubs. Just like any mama, she's going to try to protect her babies, just like we will. So that's when you may see some aggression. I do not know of any case of a bear attacking anyone in South Carolina to date. I know that we've had, you know, cases where bears stay on the ground, where a sow, you know, is protecting her cubs. But I don't know of anybody being mauled by a black bear in South Carolina. I'm not aware of that. So, again, we are fortunate our black bears are not as aggressive here, and they do choose to run generally when they're surprised or when they see humans, much like deer, they're going to run off.
Well, that's good.
That doesn't mean – but, you know, we have talked about this. One of the things to prevent human-bear encounters, if you got, you know, feeders, bird feeders and things, and a bear starts coming to that bird feeder, take the bird feeder down for a week or so. The bear will move on. They're looking for easy food. If it's not there, they're going to move somewhere else. So, you know, that's the best advice. When a bear starts showing up in a place and it's feeding on maybe, you know, one of your bird feeders, I've heard of them getting into hummingbird feeders and things, remove the feeder. Take the feeder down.
Mm-hmm.
And remove that source of food, and they're going to go on. They're going to move somewhere else because they're going to try to find the easiest food they can. If it's not there, they're going to move on. So that's the best advice I can give you. Again, if a bear's outside your door, don't walk out there and pat them on top of the head. They're not pets. They're wild animals, and they will act accordingly. Just because they're not aggressive by nature doesn't mean they won't stand their ground and protect themselves if they feel threatened. So, again, avoidance is the best key. You know, don't go walking up and see a black bear. Stop, slowly wait, and back out of that area and give that bear his space or her space.
So, like we mentioned, after we decided it was July 7th, what is up next season-wise for us as we start looking ahead to, you know, we always start looking at football season here pretty soon. With football comes a variety of hunting seasons, I guess, including, of course, the always much anticipated deer season.
Again, I can't help but quote my old first sergeant. When the deer season ends in January, so just wait 6 months, boys, and be right back.
Yeah.
We're only a month away. We're literally 5 weeks away from deer season. Hard to believe. But August 15th, deer season comes in again in parts of game zone three here. Gun season comes in, firearm season. So we're not far away. Don't know why in the world anybody wants to hunt when it's so hot and the skis, but good night. There are people that enjoy it. They enjoy that opportunity, and good on them. Have a good time. Be safe. So probably the closest thing coming is deer season with August 15th, you know, then followed by our dove season starting September 1st, the first, let's check that. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Is it September the 1st this year, or is it the first Monday? I got to look. I'm not sure. I have to kind of look at that and make sure what the season is this year. But it's going to be, hold on, I'll be able to tell you in just a second.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be Saturday the 4th. It's going to come in Saturday the 4th, first Saturday in the this year. So for Labor Day weekends, when the dove season usually always comes in. And, you know, as we talked about last time, folks are already banding. Our banders are out banding doves right now, putting leg bands on these birds so we can track kind of their movements and get more, kind of find out more about our population. It'll be interesting to see how the season goes this year. Been dry some, which helps doves probably a little bit with nesting and nest success. But again, dove season follows deer season. Deer season comes in August 15th, a lot of places. A majority of game zone 3 and 4 come in by September. Everything's in. And then the 4th is when dove season will come in. So that'll be your two major seasons coming in. Of course, you know, alligator season starts soon, too, in September. We have the alligator season going in. That starts, we talked about that a couple weeks ago. The drawing, the ability to put in for the draw, that's already closed. Fishing this time of year, again, don't want to leave out your fishermen. We just talked about flounder and all saltwater licenses, stamps, and those kinds of saltwater license. So this time of year, people are fishing, actively engaged in it. Still got the Governor's Cup Billfish Tournament going on. That'll close up at Edisto in the next week or two, couple weeks here. So fishing is kind of the name of the game right now for most folks. A few folks may be out there trying to take some hogs or your feral hogs, but for the most part, everybody's fishing now. So you're fishing across the state. When it gets hot like it's been the last few days, fishing slows down. You know, the fish go to try to find cooler water. Stripers across the lake, certain area lakes, you can still fish for stripers. Black bass, largemouth bass, brim, shell cracker, those, you know, fluctuate as far as particularly shell cracker and flatfish. Your brim are going to bite better around your full moon, toward your cycle of your moon. So plenty of people out there trying to catch those right now. Inshore saltwater doing pretty well right now. We hadn't had major storms to change the tidal creeks. The biggest thing about saltwater fishing is it changes from year to year. Every storm we have that comes through, whether it's the storm coming through in 2 days or a storm in a month or two, or a storm 2 years ago, it constantly shifting the sand on the coast, filling in deep holes, creating new holes. And so to fish the coast for salt water in our brackish water areas and salt water areas inland is really a challenge. You got to keep learning all through your life. Things keep changing. And the good holes get filled in. You got to find the next good hole for redfish, your speckled trout, sheephead areas, trees fall in, create new cover, more barnacles, sheephead come in there. Then those trees rot, fall apart, new tree comes in. So all these areas, these fish are constantly changing, and you just got to kind of keep looking, keep finding them. That's the challenge of inshore fishing.
Yeah. Yeah, the search is never ending, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. But just remember, big reminder to folks that weren't going out but flounder gigging, that the minimum size now is 16 inches. That's going to change a little bit. You know, under the water, things look bigger. So you got to make sure before you gig that flounder that it's 16 inches. And I know, Phil, you're going to ask the question, what happens if you gig one and it's not 16 inches?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't want to gig one unless it's 16. Use the head of your gig to kind of help measure that fish, kind of get a good idea of it. And then remember that the boat limit now is 10. So if you go out in a boat, the gig, you can only take 10 fish at night. 10 flounder. So that does change things a bit from when it was 20 last year, or 20 actually a couple weeks ago.
Well, you have filled our heads with all kinds of great knowledge, and we really appreciate it. We look forward to your next visit in a couple of weeks. You enjoy the great outdoors, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Always a pleasure, Phil.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much.